Okay, also thank you for the invitation to give this talk here. So what I will talk about is work done with, started with Keith Hamilton and Paolo Nason, and then later also Carlo Leari and Emanuele Re joined in this project. So let me start with a general introduction, saying sort of that the progress that we have in next to leading order calculations has been really remarkable, and this goes under the name of next to leading order revolution. And so, at least in my mind, this revolution in fact really started here in a workshop on collider physics in 2004. 2004 is really the year where people sort of started understanding systematically how to compute next to leading order calculations without really relying on Feynman diagrams. And this was really somehow the key, I believe, to this revolution. And in the last years, we saw sort of the formulation of next to leading order wish lists. So these were processes that were considered priorities for LHC physics. So processes that you really needed to know at next to leading order. And now this wish lists are in a way a really closed chapter. So all these processes, even with really quite high multiplicity in the final state, are known at next to leading order. I mean, still, it's still a very active research area, and there are two main directions still. One is sort of to push these calculations to even higher multiplicity, so to focus on more specific processes like pure jet production or WZ plus jet productions, and really push the multiplicity of the number of jets that you can have. And the other direction is to sort of go to more processes and to push for automation. So to have a code sort of like a math graph-like, but at next to leading order. And all this remarkable process really went hand in hand with the development of tools like MC at NLO or PowHack that allow you to combine next to leading order accuracy with Parton showers. And it's really nice that I can give this talk after Barbara, because then I can really say very little about this now. Now, these tools, MC at NLO and PowHack, or also Sherpa, are really always very commonly used in LHC physics analysis. And one has to say that at the beginning, only processes with no associated jets could be implemented. So things like, well, Drellian or Higgs production, Dye boson, TT bar, also VBF Higgs, where you have jets, but they're not really associated jets. And only later it was also understood how to include associated jet production. And now if we look at Higgs production, even in the gluon-gluon fusion production, we know inclusive Higgs, but also Higgs plus one jet, Higgs plus two jets. Now, if instead we move to next to leading order, I believe sort of it's fair to say that this is the year of next to leading order calculations, at least in terms of QCD. In fact, we know Higgs and Drellian since really many years, and since those first calculations, there has been lots of technical improvements, but not really much in terms of phenomenology. Well, in this year, we have full or partial results really for a number of processes, including, for instance, TT bar, Higgs plus one, jet, dye jets. And we have really, in fact, a world expert on this in this audience, Thomas German, Ott German. And I believe that this calculation that we're seeing here will really pave the way to really all 222 processes at next to leading order that are relevant for LHC physics. But at the moment, we have no method that to combine consistently next to leading order and Parton showers. And our first ideas of how to do this, at least in the case of inclusive Higgs production, were presented in this paper. And in this talk, I want to really show first implementation and first preliminary results for this. Now, this method that we suggest is based on what is called the MINLO procedure for next to leading order. So MINLO stands for multiscale improved next to leading order. And it's sort of also related to what is called a merging problem, or how to merge consistently different calculations that are NLO accurate. So I will start discussing a bit this MINLO procedure. Now, MINLO, the idea started, in fact, in a paper with Kirill Melnikov. There we sort of said, well, people that do next to leading order calculations typically, once they do an actual calculation, they fix a scale, and they compare to a leading order calculation that typically uses the same scale. But people that do more serious leading order calculations, those that develop matrix elements, typically don't use just a simple, don't just make a choice for one scale, but they use a more sophisticated procedure called CKKW, procedure for scale setting. I will explain what this is. And also typically know how to include Sudakoff effects in these matrix element calculations. So the idea, of course, the idea then was to sort of try to extend this level of sophistication to next to leading order calculations. So what is this CKK? Well, okay, let me also say that in general, you always, one can say that at next to leading order, the scale choice that you make doesn't matter that much. And this is true, but it really depends on the process you're looking at. In fact, there are cases where the scale choice that you make can really make a big difference. This is just one example, for instance. If you look at W plus free jets, if you choose as a scale, for instance, the transverse energy of the W, and then you look at a particular configuration where, for instance, a second jet is very energetic, then you have dramatic effects from your next to leading order calculation. If you choose as a scale, for instance, HT, the transverse energy in your event, things look really much nicer. So the conclusion that you draw typically can depend on the scale that you choose. So what do people do very often?
For next leading also. Sorry, you mean that also next leading is moving?
Say again?
So it might be just that the leading order scale is wrong, but I don't care if the next leading order curve is not moving, but you're saying that the next leading order is moving a lot. It's still very much scale dependent.
It is also, yeah. But also, in a way, you're also unhappy if the leading order moves a lot, because, it depends on the tool that you use, but typically you are more sort of happy if you see that your corrections are small. Then you sort of believe that you believe that the perturbative series is converging better.
Normally I do an extremely good calculation exactly because I want something which is not scale dependent, right?
Yeah.
And I read off the right scale from the plateau that Marmara was showing before.
Yeah.
I know. But here you're saying that the next mini order is actually moving.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Yeah. But also this is Okay. This is
because LO and NLO agree in one case, it may be accidental. So it's just not clear what is the right scale.
I fully agree. It was just to sort of sketch that there is an issue in the scale that you choose. So that essentially, if you blindly do a calculation and choose just this scale, then you would get very different conclusions if you blindly choose a scale and get this plot out. But in fact, yeah.
Julia's argument, if you see that for that scale your perturbative series behaves well, right, you have a suggestion that that's the right scale. So you can also use this argument by itself to say that the right ended is better than the left ended. Of course, you would like actually to have the same, right? You have to like the same curve, the black curve in the left and the right. That's what you would really like, to see that it doesn't change, the black. Right? That's what we'd really like. But unfortunately, it changes. So.
Yeah, but even after you settle down, is it a scale that seems that the conservative series is more stable to give you an assessment of uncertainty in the
fine? Yes, so in fact, so what is typically done is that you choose a scale in a way maybe I continue with my talk and then we'll discuss, because this is sort of what I want to say. So typically, what is done typically? Typically, you choose a scale a posteriori. So you understand that, in that particular example, let me also say, this particular example, the scale to the left is the transverse energy of the W, and the scale to the right is the total transverse energy of the event. So if you go to very high PTs for the jets, your W will typically still stay soft. So the scale doesn't scale with the hardness of the process. So you understand a posteriori that this was not a good choice. And then you can say, I choose the total transverse energy. So but So in general, then often you determine a scale a posteriori by looking at your plots and observing what we expect. Even for Higgs production, now typically we use MH over 2. But who says that this MH over 2 is the right scale compared to MH? It is because the series converges better at MH over 2 than MH. So a posteriori. And the reason, well, why does one do it? Well, we know that if you make a wrong choice, you will have large logs. So you know that your series will converge very badly if you make a wrong choice. On the other hand, we also know that if you have large next to leading order corrections, it doesn't necessarily mean that you made a bad choice, because there are next leading order corrections that are very genuine. For instance, you can have new channels that open up. For instance, leading order, you have only quark channels, and next leading order, you start opening up gluon channels. So you have genuine next leading order corrections. You have Sudakov logs. You can have corrections inside by color, and so on. And also, when you choose a scale, in a way, you are sort of changing single logs in your calculation. So if you have any effect that is a double log correction, you can never really absorb it correctly by making a good scale choice. And finally, let me say that if you choose a scale where the corrections are small, I mean a posteriori, then it's sort of hard to argue that if you vary the scale, this is a fair estimate of your theoretical uncertainty. So in that case, sort of, it can be misleading to vary the scales. So now let me come back to what is done at leading order. When I said these more serious leading order calculations, well, typically, leading order calculations follow what is called the CKKW procedure for setting the scales. And on top of this includes Sudakov form factors. Now, let me remind you, Sudakov form factor, Barbara already said it, essentially encodes the probability to evolve from one scale to another one without emitting anything above a given resolution scale. And now, what is this procedure for? So what is the CKKW procedure? Well, essentially, if you have a very complicated finite state where you have a W and many jets, what you can do is you can try to reconstruct the branching history, the most likely branching history that happened in your event. And how do? You run a KT algorithm to sort of cluster back particles. A KT algorithm has a measure that is small when a branching is very soft or branchings are collinear. And this really respects the structure of the divergences that we have in QCD. So by reconstructing using the KT algorithm, you sort of try to find the most likely branching history. And then what you can do is, for each branching that happened, you can evaluate the coupling at the local transverse momentum of the splitting, so the relative transverse momentum. And then you can include this Sudakov form factors that give you the probability to evolve from one node to the next without any branching, above a given resolution scale. And then you can let your pattern shower include the radiation below this resolution scale. So this is what is done in leading order calculations. And one, you can also see that here, when you introduce this local scale, here you also introduce at the same time the Sudakov effects. And okay, MILO was a procedure, born as a procedure really to extend the CKKW procedure to next to leading order, in such a way that you make this choice for the scale based on your branching history, but a priori, not a posteriori. And the focus, I mean, you expect this to work well in processes where you have many associated jets, where you're dominated by sort of QCD branchings. Now, how can you extend this to next to leading order? Well, a generic next to leading order cross-section has always this form. So you have a Born term proportional to your alpha to the n, virtual correction alpha to the n plus 1, and this is the scale, the explicit scale dependence. The explicit term that you need to have scale compensation at next to leading order, plus you have your real radiation term. Now, if you change scales for the Born term here, so if you, instead of having one fixed scale, you have n different scales, in order to have scale compensation, what you have to do is you have to change this term here in such a way that you have these different scales here. So this guarantees that you have scale compensation. But other than that, you can do what you want with this scale or that scale here. And the other observation is, of course, if in front of the Born term you had a Sudakov form factor, if you expand the Sudakov form factor to first order, it will generate something that is next to leading order. So in order to maintain an next to leading order accuracy, if you include Sudakov form factors, you have to subtract, just subtract this to avoid double counting. But other than that, then you can choose. I mean, you have a lot of freedom in this type, in the scales here. In principle, you have also freedom if you include or not pseudo-Coffman factors in front of the next to leading order term. And our guiding principle is to sort of try to stay as close as possible to the leading order CKKW. So we include pseudo-Coffman factors everywhere. And this is now how the recipe for this original, the first formulation of this mean law. So we use KT algorithms to cluster the event, and then we assign these n clustering scales. We set the softest scale Q0 equal to the softest of those scales. Then we evaluate the n coupling constant to those scales here. For the virtual correction, we use the geometric average of the scales. And for the factorization scale, we set it to the softest of those scales. We include pseudo-Coffman factors everywhere, so Born, virtual, and real, after the first branching. So we do this subtraction. This is absolutely necessary to guarantee next reading order accuracy. And then we had a recipe to, well, as I said, this additional power of alpha, you can do what you want. So in particular, we choose the arithmetic average of the couplings.
So, sorry, why for the mu r you use the geometric average?
Well, so of the here you have to. So here you have to absolutely use the to have scale compensation. But
I know. I thought you were using the geometric average. There in the log only, not in the alpha s. You use always.
We use the arithmetic.
Okay.
But yeah.
So in each alpha s, even for the virtual, you use mu one, mu n.
You have n powers are sort of determined. We do the same choice here, and for the n plus one, you can take.
In other words, sorry, and my question is, what do you use for this alpha s n plus one? I understand you can use what you want.
Maybe one should drag it here as alpha s. You can put a big bracket.
Okay.
Sorry, it's a bit. Okay, now let me just show you one equation where you can see practically how this happens. So take, for instance, Higgs plus one jet production. Barbara already discussed this function, this B-bar function, that is usually introduced in Pauheg, which essentially is the next to leading order, differential next to leading order cross-section, but integrated over these radiation variables. So if you take normal Higgs plus one jet, your B-bar function has this form. You have three powers of alpha at your given renormalization scale, and then here you have one additional power of alpha in there. Now, with mean law, how do you change this formula? Well, with mean law, this is a picture that you have in mind. So you have a Higgs produced by this effective interaction, and then a jet generated here. Then you see that you have pseudo-Coff for all external legs and for all internal legs. Because you set the soft scale to Q0, these pseudo-Coffs are all just one. So you effectively have only two pseudo-Coff effects here, which are introduced here. So you see you have, you change the scale. This scale here becomes a QT. This remains sort of the scale of the primary interaction, so M Higgs. You include the pseudo-Coff effect, and then this is the subtraction, so the expansion of the pseudo-Coff effect. Sort of a bit schematically, but to see how this formula changes. Now, what are... You do it, not for, you have a calculation? Yes, but at the end, once you have everything, you essentially correct with a factor. So typically you can have a fixed scale, and then you can multiply by the correction factor once you have the whole. So it's really a few lines of coding that you have to do. Yeah.
In the diagram, you cannot change the G.
No, of course not.
So it's all, yeah. Next to next, you mean?
No. You have, it's not, you shouldn't think of diagram. You should think about momenta. Mm. So you have, you're computing next to, so you generate one event, one set of momenta. And then you use those set of momenta to determine your couplings, not the diagram.
Yeah, you reweight, right? You.
And then once you have these scales, you can reweight a posteriori. So you computed your NLO before integrating over phase space, you multiply by correction factor. So it's really very simple. So what are the properties now of this procedure? Well, results remain the next reading order accurate. So really the scale dependency is next to next to. We include Sudakov effects. So somehow results are finite if you go to Sudakov regions. The accuracy there depends on the Sudakov that you include. But essentially you have this smooth behavior, so finite behavior in the Sudakov regions. In particular, cross-sections remain finite even without jet cuts. So typically, if you look at Higgs plus one jet and you do an X-reading order calculation, unless you require a minimum PT for your jet, your result is divergent. In this case, that's not the case. Your result remains finite even at low PT. So this also means, that technically, this means that you don't need generation cuts or this Pouren suppression that Barbara mentioned. So if you take something like X plus one jet and integrate it over the jet transverse momentum, your result remains leading order or beta accurate. I will discuss in detail what this is. And as I said, the procedure is really very simple to implement in any next leading order calculation. Now let me show you some first results. So what I'm looking at here is the Higgs transverse momentum. And now I compare, so, there are various curves. So one is inclusive GGH production in Pauheg. This is HA with the Minlo procedure. And this is Higgs plus one jet with different scale choices. So this running scale choices is HT that I mentioned before, or fixed scale is the mass of the Higgs in this case. And what you can see here, I mean, what is shown here is the ratio to the inclusive Higgs production shown here. So what you see is that, in fact, this HA Minlo follows really, even at very small PTs for the Higgs, so the results remain finite. The band becomes a bit larger because here you're losing some on X-leading order accuracy. You have logs. On the other hand, if you take the running both of these results, they sort of diverge in this region here. Now, the thing that happens, you see it a little bit here, is despite the fact that these things diverge, the band becomes smaller, sort of saying then it's not really reliable anymore to use the scale variation to assess the uncertainties here. And one can also see that somehow Minlo is somehow in better agreement with this fixed scale rather than this running scale. And this one might think this is surprising because the running scale here, HT, is sort of the transverse momentum at the end. And in Minlo, you are choosing the transverse momentum. So why are you not in good agreement here? Well, the reason is that here you choose the running scale, but you don't have the Sudakov to sort of compensate this. So practically, at the end, the fixed scale is in better agreement. You can also take Higgs plus two jets, again, in Pauheg, and implement this Minlo procedure, and look again only at the Higgs transverse momentum. And you can compare it with Higgs plus one jet with the Minlo procedure implemented. You can't compare it now to anything else because all of the results diverge for this if you don't have jet cuts. But again, you see that somehow, even for Higgs plus two jets, this follows very nicely even at PT to zero. The band again becomes a little bit larger, but there is really good agreement. So this is the PT of the Higgs. This is Y01, which is essentially PT of the jet. Now, you say, well, if this agrees so nicely, one should ask the question, how well do I agree really formally? What is the accuracy? And okay, let me just, I don't have to. So one can show.
Have you compared the inclusive Higgs production PT spectrum for to the RESAM and NLO calculation?
Okay, let me finish my talk.
Okay.
And then, I will show plots for this, okay? So. One can ask the question, what is the accuracy of Minlo plus Parton shower, when you look at inclusive quantities. So for instance, you integrate, you look at Higgs plus one jet, but you integrate over the jet transverse momentum. And you can see that it's almost next to leading order. So from accuracy is alpha to the 3/2, so it's not quite. But we also looked in detail at a particular process of Higgs or Drellian production. And one can show that, okay, you can slightly modify the procedure that I explained to you. I told you that there is some freedom. You can use this freedom in such a way that when you integrate out over the Higgs PT, you get really next to leading order accuracy. And so we show this in this particular case of Higgs production. And can one do it also in the general case? Well, we don't know yet, but the fact that it works sort of in a simple way for a simple process, okay, maybe you can solve the also more general case. But so what's the proof that you can, so how do you keep next leading order accuracy? So let me sketch a proof of this. I already showed you this HA-Minlow formula, so where you compute this B-bar function, including Sudakoff effects, subtraction, and so on. Now let me write explicitly. So this is your Sudakoff effect. This function contains the usual double logs, single logs, and you can expand it out. And this is the subtraction that you need here to preserve any low accuracy. Now the idea is to compare this formula with next-to-next leading log transformation formula, including sort of finite parts to achieve any low accuracy for inclusive Higgs production. And then you can see what terms are missing here if you want to achieve next leading order accuracy. So let me sketch it. So this is, you can write the next leading log formula for Higgs production in this form. So these are coefficient functions that you need to know at order alpha s squared if you want any low accuracy for Higgs. And so you can write it as a differential. So if you integrate over QT, all you get is some of this simple form. And now this formula is next leading order accurate as long as you have order alpha as corrections in these coefficient functions. Now what you can do is instead you can take really the derivative and see what are the terms that are missing in. So if you take the derivative, because you have a Sudakoff here, when you take the derivative, you generate terms of this form. So you can really see which term comes from who. For instance, because you have B1 in your Sudakoff, when you take a derivative, you will generate a term, d over d log of alpha log is just alpha, and so on. So you get B2 terms A1, so this is alpha log squared in the Sudakoff. When you take the derivative, you get alpha log, and so on. So you, terms like this come from 2C1 times A1, and you can really see what are all the terms that you can get. And now you think about integrating this formula. Now you want to integrate over this. So you integrate over D log with your Sudakoff weight. So this, you should think about alpha log squared. So when you integrate, the way to think about this is as DL, or log of DL, will count as 1/√ of alpha. So you have all these terms. You integrate, and you see that terms like this one, alpha s squared, that comes from B2 in the Sudakoff, once you integrate over DL, counts as alpha to the 3/2. This means that unless you include B2, you don't have next to leading order accuracy. But all other terms that you're missing, the things like this, will really, well, do not matter for any low accuracy. You can drop them. And so some of the conclusion of this is that the original Minlow prescription was not really next leading order accurate because the Sudakoff didn't include this factor B2. But also, okay, I didn't. Also, what is important is the way you set the scale now in the real and virtual. And here you have to set it to the Higgs transverse momentum, which is used in the NLR resummation formula. But if you do this, if you do these changes, then the Higgs plus one jet calculation upgraded with this Minlow procedure is next to leading order accurate, both for Higgs production and Higgs plus one jet. No. I mean, you could, you can look numerically whether it's A1 and A2. A3 is sort of part of you can or you can't. It's sort of higher order. And at the end, in there, we didn't. Yeah. In a way, it goes together. Yeah. So we put it in, but anything that make. So let me also stress that there are many approaches that sort of look at this merging. If you have next reading order calculation for Higgs and Higgs plus one, it's sort of natural to have look for something that is NLO accurate everywhere. But typical, all our approaches sort of use a merging scale. So if you are above a merging scale, you use a calculation, below you use a different one. And when you do this, you introduce a dependence on your merging scale that is really formally next to leading order. It's not higher order. But in this case, you don't have any merging scale at all. Okay, let me also show a bit of phenomenology now for this. The plots are not so good. So the setting is, okay, usual Higgs mass 8 TV, And when I show bands, what I always do is I fix a central scale and I do a 7-point variation. So I change mu I and mu f independently, but avoid the combinations where they are a factor of four apart. Right. And now you can, plots are not so nice, but what is shown here is Higgs production with its band and Higgs plus one jet. And here you see the ratio, so this is really within the band. Or you can look at it the other way around. So this is the band now of Higgs plus one jet and this is the ratio to Higgs plus one jet. So you see again some of there is very good agreement and the bands are of the same size. You can look also at the Higgs PT, again with these two quotes, Higgs or Higgs plus one jet. And again, things agree nicely. In this case, there is a change in shape. But you also see that for Higgs production now, here the band, the uncertainty band increases. Because if you go to high PT, the Higgs calculation is only leading order accurate when you describe the PT of the Higgs. So it's fine that here the band increases. But in Higgs plus one jet, it's really NLO accurate everywhere. So the band really stays nicely flat. So. White and left, it's the same, but in one you look at the uncertain. No. So in both I vary the scales. So here I have Higgs plus Higgs with the uncertainty band from Higgs. So I vary the scales here, and in the other one I just plot the central value. Yeah. Okay. Because if you plot two bands, you don't see anything. Ideally, you would plot two central values and two bands, but if you do it, then. I think you don't understand.
So the overall normalization is the same.
The overall normalization is, it's the same.
Automatically.
Not automatically, if you want a posteriori. It's a. No, you don't fix it. No, you don't fix it. Okay. So before I sort of continue, let me also show that, so we implemented this also in processes like WJJ or ZJJ. And what you can do then, I mean, once you have this minimal prescription, you look at the process with two jets, but then you can look at things where you don't have any jet or you also have many jets that just come from the parton shower. And we compared, for instance, here this with Atlas data. And this is how you see really the beautiful agreement with data for WJJ, ZJJ. And in this case, I mean, there is nothing you can play with. I mean, once the procedure is set, there is nothing that you can change. So the agreement is good, but it's really out of the box. In fact, when we started looking at this, we had a 20-30% discrepancy. And we thought, I mean, there's nothing we can do about this. And at the end, we realized that we were running at 8 TV and data was at 7 TV. And so, but there was nothing that we could have otherwise changed in this. And so on. This is also, the same is also for distributions. You have this nice agreement. Now data sort of fluctuates quite a bit, but in general the agreement is really good. Now, let me go back to the main question. How can you use now this Minlo procedure to upgrade PowHack to next to leading order? Let me just do this. I have to go back. So you can consider, let's focus on the case of Higgs production. So you can take the rapidity distribution. We know Higgs production is known at next to leading order. And this, this calculation has always to be an external input in what I do. I mean, we're not providing next to leading order results. But you can also take the rapidity distribution for the Higgs production as computed with this HA mean low generator. Now, if you take the ratio of these two, they start with an expansion that starts at order alpha s squared to produce the Higgs, and then you have an x to leading order, next to next leading order term. And the just trivial observation is that because this generator is NLO accurate, these two terms are the same. So when you take this ratio, you get 1 plus something that is order alpha s squared, so not something that is order alpha s. What this means is that if you take now the rapidity distribution from HA mean law and apply this reweighting factor, you get something that is next to next to leading order accurate, including Patochar effects, really exactly in the same way as MC at NLO, Powerhack are next to leading order plus Patochar accurate. One can also sort of apply variants of this procedure. So you can sort of take your distribution, now differential in QT and rapidity, and just add and subtract effect function H. And then you can construct functions, for instance, that smoothly interpolate between 1 and 0, so that at the small pt, you are 1, and when you go to high pt, the function goes to 0. When you go to high pt, in a way, you don't need to do any reweighting, because you are next to leading order, calculation of Higgs production is also only NLO accurate. So somehow you can introduce functions and apply reweightings using this function, keeping your accuracy, but sort of using this handle in a way as a, well, as a way to sort of probe also uncertainties in the procedure that you're doing. In a way, it's sort of like a resummation scale when you do this calculation, resum calculation, because it sets where do you reweight and where you don't. So let me stress all plots here are preliminary. And so what is shown here now is H and NLO with its uncertainty band and the results from this H and Milo procedure using 5 different reweighting functions. So we use this freedom that we have to change this. And you sort of see, and this is then the ratio next to. So you see that this is the uncertainty band. Everything is really nicely within the band. Which scale? In
the ratio.
The scale in HNLO is. Ah, sorry, all right, this was cut away. this is about 20% so this is 0.5, 1.5, sorry. This was cut away.
This is a check block, and if you reweight, you have to be of 1.
Well, if you reweight with the function H set to 1, so if you reweight to do the Higgs rapidity exactly, then you get exactly there. But we have this function that smoothens this out a little bit, and then, in a way, okay, yeah. No surprises, yeah. The only thing that you see here is that when you change this function, things don't change very much here. As it says, this is sort of validation plots, yeah. Now, the other question one could ask is it fine to rescale at Lesouch event level, or should one really rescale it after the Parton shower? And again, from this plot, you see that it makes no difference. This is, again, the band as before. And this is if green is if you reweight at Lesouch level, and this is if you reweight after the Parton shower. And again, you see there is essentially no difference. And this is not surprising. Once you have next to leading order accuracy, the Parton shower has no effect on the rapidity distribution of the Higgs. Again, rapidity distribution of the Higgs. Now you can look at the uncertainty band that you obtain from HA mean law, so what I now call next to leading order plus Parton shower. So now again, these two sets of plots. One is the band of H and NLO, and this is the band of the new next to plus Parton shower. You see that the bands are really comparable again, as expected. Now, what happens if you look at our distributions? So, for instance, you can look at the transverse momentum distribution of the Higgs. Now, this is a prediction from H and NLO that diverges at very small transverse momenta. Then you can take predictions before rescaling, for instance, at next to leading order level, again, this diverges, including Sudakov effects, this is now finite, and also with the uncertainty band here. Right. So you see, here things, fixed order results, of course, diverge, and at high scales, there is pretty much agreement, but there is a bit of chain shape here. And so finally, these are sort of the last plots that I show. These now include the comparison also to so HQT. HQT now includes next to next to leading order and next to next to leading log resummation. So you can take this, I mean, again, set the scale to Higgs mass and do the seven scale variation band. And now here, in this set of plot, I'm using essentially two different reweighting functions, so two different scales in this function H. And you can see how well the agreement is. So this is if we choose as a scale the Higgs mass in HQT, and these are the same plots, but choosing Higgs mass over two. So somehow, I mean, things... Okay, one has to maybe still understand these plots. This is where we are sort of now in terms of understanding these plots. Things agree, I mean, predictions are almost always within the band, but there are shape differences that I think need to be understood a bit better. But, they suggest a mesh over two. Here, yeah. With our limited Sulakov. No, that's right. It's, in fact, okay, here you see. Here, it's not a surprise. Here, I don't know. I mean, also these kinks are, yeah.
When you have up to 30% differences in the peak, it's big, right? No.
Here, yeah. But as he says, I mean, that's maybe not surprising. Okay, so this brings me to my conclusions. So Minlow was born as a simple procedure to set scales and include Sudakov effects in analog calculations. And the key features is that, unlike normal next to leading order calculations that break down when you go to Sudakov regions without cuts, the results are always well behaved. Away from the Sudakov regions, results are really formally next to leading order accurate. And the procedure is really very simple to implement. So if you have an analog calculation, you really have to add few lines to your code to implement the procedure. This new Minlow procedure, so the modified version of it, also really reproduces formally next to leading order accurate results for from these generators, also for inclusive distributions. So essentially, it achieves this merging of two calculations without doing any merging. And as I showed you, this provides a really simple way to upgrade PowHack to next to leading order accuracy. I showed you some validation plots, and more phenomenology will come, I think. Thank you.
You already mentioned, but let me comment again, that the choice of MH over 2 in gluon fusion is fully dictated by comparison with resummation, okay? So it's something that you do to simulate a more accurate calculation. So for me, the key word here is really resummation, and any discussion on QCD scale variation, if you do not include the resummation, it's misleading, because let me give you an example. Take an electroweak calculation, okay? Do you have a mu problem? No. Select now alpha QED of zero as a renormalization scheme instead of G Fermi, and you will get it completely wrong. I mean, but this has to do with the resummation, even if you don't have a QCD scale problem.
Well, okay. Okay. Yeah, that's right, anyway.
Poor woman's estimation.
No, okay. I mean, I think in general, you are right, but I think for many processes that are interesting, there is no good transformation. Take W plus 4 jets. People struggle to do an next to leading order calculation, and I think it's fair that you sort of try to get the best out of it and not spoil the calculation with a bad choice. But it's true, I mean, assessing the uncertainty variable in this case, we know it's a very limited procedure, but.
I just wanted to add to what Matthias was saying, or at least what I think he was saying. So usually when we have the running coupling, we think of it as a, you know, integrator on it for each particular diagram, because obviously each diagram is different, so the virtualities are different, so somehow this is what, it's natural in a way, right? But in practice, this is hard to do because it's not like when you do the calculation, you add the, you know, integral per integral. It's maybe impossible. So in that sense, I guess this is some sort of an effective procedure, which is more closer to reality as opposed to the usual scale setting, which is just one place for the whole set of diagram.
No, but I think somehow, I mean, these calculations are really also practical. I don't even have Feynman diagrams. Yeah, those maybe are done with unitarity cuts and things like that. So one should really move away from, for me, it's not, it's more natural to think about the event that you have, the distribution of, and then use this to see this get, I don't, first it's gauge dependent, so it doesn't clearly.
No, but I mean, you can even do pieces in the diagram.
Yeah. Even if it's several integrals, they are different.
Well, we no, I mean, what you do, I mean, what you do is you try to reconcile what you call the most likely branch.
Right, which is
most likely. Exactly. It's not what happened, of course.
Yeah, exactly,
but,
that's the point.
If a gluon is very collinear to a quark, then most likely it's a hard quark that emitted. But maybe it came from somewhere else. Fine, sure. Most probably.
And I also had one kind of question comment. So you emphasized several times that in the case, let's say, when the PT goes to zero, the result remains finite. But I really don't see a problem if it diverges simply because, you know, that reflects the physics, right? In your definition of the observable, you require a jet. When the PT goes to zero, you're losing it. So, you know, the definition of the observable becomes meaningless. So if it diverges, there is nothing wrong with that. You said that PT goes to zero?
So let's take PT of the Higgs as an observable. The problem is that if I use as a calculation, my calculation, Higgs plus one jet, my calculation will diverge. But the physics doesn't. That's the problem.
Yeah.
While here, the calculation also doesn't diverge.
No. I'm saying if I require to have one jet and the PT goes to zero, that means that I cannot see it anymore. So that's not anymore the same observable that I want to study. So diverging, no problem with that.
I don't require jet. In fact, I mean, the problem, if you want, is also that jets that are required or vetoed on experimentally always have a very small PT. So if you go to 20 GV PT, it's really the region where fixed order doesn't work, but experimentally they can still talk about a jet. So somehow it's nice to have good description of this intermediate region. So experimentally it makes sense to talk about 20 GV. Jet. We are 25. But your calculation is really where it starts diverging if you just use a fixed order calculation. It's really. No, but as I say, practically the 25, 30, 20 GV region is the region which is interesting and fixed order is not reliable anymore.
You look at the PT of the Higgs, right? You don't need to look at the jet. Then what you do? I can look at the PT of the Higgs and zero.
So formally, your parton shower in this NLO plus parton shower, at what accuracy is it? Is it full next to leading log, or is it next to leading, is it leading log with some
it's
next to leading log?
With some.
So when you say, you know, one power, you upgrade power to an next to leading order, you know, the procedure that you have outlined so far relies on this on the fact that the two-loop stuff lives in a one-dimensional space, right? I mean, that statement is...
Yeah.
No, can you do it at Tiki Bar, for Tiki Bar?
Okay, for Tiki Bar, no. But even for Dreyan, it would be more difficult. So here, it's somehow you really use the fact that the Higgs is a scalar and so on. If you wanted to do it for Dreyan, you should do sort of a... You can't reweight using one dimension, as you see.
The statement, which is, I understand, so far true for these kind of processes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we are perfect on time. We thank our speakers again. And we reconvene a bit, like, 3 minutes before 11, not just at 11, a bit before. Thank you.